named Dave, and he was a cowboy through and through. Lean and tall, he grew in the saddle, loving that life from the first day he set foot to stirrup. And it was something, they say, to see him take off over a ridge and gallop across the Golden Range. The wide open spaces have a rhythm of their own, you know, as those who live there know. And young Dave learned to hear it, to feel it from the time he was very small, in the hoofbeats of the horse he rode, in the flutter of his shirt in the wind, in the sputter of the old engine that drove the well pump. Dave knew, as the reins in his hand, the rhythm of the range. His mother, Elizabeth, a piano teacher, was determined that her sons grow up to be civilized cowpokes, and so she prodded each of the boys through weekly piano lessons, hoping the beauty of another life would somehow rub off. And Dave got good enough to play in a little Western band as a teenager. When his chores at the ranch were done, he and the other fellas would head out for one of the tiny towns in the foothills, Angel's Camp or Fiddletown or Grizzly Flats, and they would play for some social doings or other. Yet there was nothing in the world that Dave loved more than to return to the ranch when the doings were done, to a night sky of diamonds on black velvet, a chorus of crickets, sweet-scented breeze wafted in off the plain, and to the eager anticipation of another day in the life, in the sun, in the saddle, on the range. But this is the rest of the story. It was David's mother who finally convinced the boy that even a rancher needs all of the book learning he can get. A degree as a veterinarian, perhaps, so that he could tend to sick animals all by himself. And so at age 18, Dave left his father's 45,000-acre spread to attend the College of the Pacific in Stockton. And Dave did his best, and yet day after day he sat in his freshman zoology class, unable to concentrate, mesmerized by the distant melodies and rhythms that crept in through the open classroom window, the sounds from 100 yards across the campus lawn, the sounds from the Stockton Conservatory of Music. So distracting, so seductive were the strains that often Dave was observed sitting in his chair, gazing wide-eyed into a notebook of completely blank pages. Until at last one day Professor Arnold took Dave aside. He said, "Son, your heart is not here. Go on over to the conservatory. That's where you belong." And Dave took the professor's advice. He changed his college major to music, and he never changed it back. In the land of jazz music, there lives a legend, a brilliant innovator who redefined the form. But now, when you hear his music, a paradoxical portrait will spring to your mind, the portrait of a lean, tall cowboy on a horse in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, listening with his ears and with his soul to the rhythm of the range, even though the man and his music, to generations of listeners worldwide, have seemed ultimately citified, sophisticated, urbane. For Dave, the cowboy, who once happily envisioned a lifetime as a cowboy, the world has come to respect as Dave Brubeck. Only now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is Jake Fredericks, HR and payroll consultant for Paychex. We're going to be talking about the most common human resource challenges facing most employers of all sizes, minimum wage mandates and how they're impacting employers and the economy, and how do you create a positive multi-generational workforce. Jake, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. We talked about disasters in the first segment, and I think I'm sure a lot of employers think dealing with HR issues could be a disaster as well.
How opportunistic, yes.
It's the theme of the show today, I guess. Folks, you can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Jake, tell us a little bit about how you became an HR and payroll consultant and a bit about paychecks.
Yes, thank you, Barry. So, I'm a California native. I was... Basically, in 2018, we made the move up to the Central Coast, and I worked in corporate management in Southern California, and it was in hospitality. So I worked in the front and in the back of the house for many years, and then I moved into technology sales, specifically business to business, why I was operating a business, and I understood the issues, and it made sense to make that transition. So I went into fintech, just payments, ACH. And then finally into HR, and I've loved every minute of it. I've been doing it for the last 6 years, on and off with paychecks for 5 years in a role where I'm just working directly with businesses.
That's great. So let's go to the first big issue here. And you know, it got tipped off. Last week there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, and apparently California's $25 an hour minimum wage has boomeranged on... Governor Greaseball here. Apparently, because the legislature is scrambling because they may have to delay the state's higher health care minimum wage costs. Basically, as everybody on that listens to this station knows, our state budget is a disaster. It's anywhere from $40 to $80 billion in the red, and apparently this gift to the healthcare unions that Governor Newsom was trying to deliver is blowing another $4 billion hole in the budget. So in your experience, Jake, what are you seeing on this minimum wage front right now? What kind of industries are being impacted the most? Who does it apply to? And let's do a primer on this for folks who this may be impacting.
Sure. AB 128 was signed September 28th of last year. That's the different bill. So the one that you're referring to specifically goes into effect or went into effect June 1st of this year. And basically, there are four categories of healthcare that is impacted and the wage that's associated with it. And it was about a 21% increase in pay that was going across the board for that. And what you're purporting to is, basically they're realizing that this massive increase in hourly and wage isn't sustainable. And, the businesses that I work with, that's essentially where they're at. They have plans to increase pay. They have their own, plans to do improvements and wage increases, but to do it categorically and to do it so great has a big impact on the industry. So I totally understand why this is happening.
So this is specific to the healthcare, what you're referring to here. But what about, we hear a lot about what's going on in the fast food industry.
Yes.
And so what kind of impact you see in there?
Yeah, so that was AB 1228, which was signed in September. So fast food took a big hit, and they had a huge increase in expected hourly rates based on if they're part of a franchise. Mm-hmm. So example could be, El Pollo Loco. We have an El Pollo Loco here in, the owner could only have potentially four locations. And, you think of franchises, you think of these big companies with all these resources. But a smaller franchise would be impacted by that, and they would have to meet the mandate. And, in that time when it was signed in September, Pizza Hut cut 1,000 delivery drivers before the mandate took place. And so that was a huge adjustment that a franchise made in the process. And so that $20 hour rate is turning to be not as sustainable.
What did they do? Outsource the delivery to like one of these other gig type services?
Yeah. So there are a lot of providers now that do the delivery that last mile, mm-hmm. and they have to rely on those. Or you think of a smaller franchise, the owner might be doing it. Their daughter might be doing it, and that happens quite often. Even though it looks like this is a major large company, these are owned and operated by local individuals.
Yeah. So how is this impacting, let's just say, our local restaurant businesses here locally? I mean, they have to comply with this as well, don't they?
No. So the requirement for this is based on fast food. So it's based on a limited service providing restaurant, and it's the chain associated. California has a mandated minimum wage of $16 an hour. The city has an option to increase that number. Paso and San Luis Obispo does not do that, but that rate right now is $16 an hour plus whatever tips and gratuity.
So, okay. So, yeah, that's so again, but what we're seeing here is on the fast food industry, what is Paychex seeing as far as what are those guys doing to adapt to this higher minimum wage?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that happens, the response to it is just reduced hours. You can't keep the same workforce working the same hours at a 25% increase and still be sustainable unless you turn around and you charge the customers 25% more. But even a 3-5% increase in cost weighs on the customer base. They notice a 3-5% increase in cost. So then it's reduced hours. It's not hiring as much. It's leveraging existing employees to work additional hours. So it creates more burden on the additional workforce, brings in ownership to take on responsibility roles they didn't have before. And it just means increased cost for consumers.
And ultimately, I'd be interested to know if Paychex has done any research on this, but I found a couple of articles, one from the Harvard Business Review, that basically when minimum wages go up, it usually leads to lower compensation because again, they shift the employer figures out how to shift the hours around. And then there was something from Forbes that basically says that the minimum wage hurts mostly the disadvantaged because it's the lower end of the employment scale that gets pushed out either by automation or again. So again, has Paychex done any research in this area?
Yeah. So probably the best study that I've seen that reflects this idea of an increased minimum wage is our state above us, Seattle. 2015, they went through another major quality upgrade to minimum wage. They went up to $15 an hour in 2015. And they now have almost 10 year data on that impact. And the greatest impact is just they don't get as many hours. They're not working as much and hiring isn't happening. And then overall, there is an increase in what they wind up making on an annual basis, but it's not equivalent to what it'd be if they took a second job and were working that other job, or if they got put on salary or something that allows them to better their lives.
Do you have any idea how, you know, the current national administration touts the low unemployment rate? Do we have any sense of what these higher minimum wages are doing to the unemployment rate?
I mean, it's a loaded question as far as how that impacts one particular industry, can say low skill. You can speak to the low skill earner, and you know, you would think that something like this would have the greatest impact on those individuals and that employees. But the employer, when they attempt to hire more and they attempt to grow, they start to run into these issues of bringing on these additional staff and then knowing the cost to bring them on. They just try to get real creative with how they manage that time.
I think the biggest detriment is the fact that you've got these teenagers who really do need to have an entry level job to learn how to show up at work on time, how to deal with customers on a one-on-one basis. And at a higher minimum wage, just it crowds those people out of the job market.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's shift gears. What are some of the other challenges businesses face when they're trying to find employees today?
Yeah. So, you know, the one thing sounds silly enough, but the one thing I hear is that it's just hard to get people to show up to interviews. And so they say they're going to be there and then they're not there. And, you know, that's just a kind of sentiment to the job market and, you know, some of the, you know, how it's semi-employee friendly. When it comes to looking for jobs, a lot of times employees are looking for another job while they're at a job And so they're trying to, like, you know, add additional income. And so they're just going to cherry pick what they're taking. I think the onboarding process for an employee is super important. When a culture of a company starts from day one and they work through that onboarding process and simplify it, like simple clicks to apply, simple clicks to input information, you know, being able to get direct deposit, seeing where your funds are, like all those simple things, they don't seem like much to an employer, but to an employee who's used to using their phone or having access to stuff immediately, these are all simple things that an employer can do to kind of abate that a little bit. And there is a job market shortage. I mean, there's just no reality to say it otherwise. There is a job market shortage. Resumes are getting padded. That's another thing. You know, HR professionals are dealing with resumes and, you know, they have to do their due diligence on resumes. So that's another thing when, you know, you have employees coming to, you know, to apply for positions. And then diversity, equity, inclusion. That's a big thing in the employee-employee relationship as you look generationally. The expectation of the employee when on their first day or, you know, being an employee, all those things have an impact.
I saw an article this morning in the Wall Street Journal that Harvard is actually rolling back their DEI program where they up till recently, this new policy that they've hit, that they, what was it? There was some sort of statement of, I can't remember what the term was, but somebody had to write a statement about how committed they are to DEI, and they've gotten rid of that requirement now in hiring new professors. So, and I know that a lot of big businesses are trying to get away from these DEI consultants coming in to their place of work because it's created such animus amongst the employees. Have you seen any of that in your experience?
You know, my own company has a developed program. Mm-hmm. I think the overall message that I receive is one of equality. Mm-hmm. That there's a common workplace no matter where you are. I work for a large company, so you know we do have all walks of life, and we have anybody, you know, lots of different skill sets. And at the end of the day, I think having a culture where you include those things, I think is very important. Mm-hmm. I think if you try to overemphasize it or if you mandate things, you know, you start to create an environment where it feels forced.
Mm-hmm. According to one of these articles that I pulled off the internet, of course, from a company called Good Time, whatever who they are, but they must be an HR thing. They were mentioning that that in hiring people, they're finding that there's a growing skills mismatch, that the people that are going to interview it for jobs don't have the skills that they're looking for. Is that something that you're seeing as well?
I think because of an existing shortage and because it's harder to find candidates, and being it that a lot of applications are happening online, you know, the face-to-face isn't happening after several steps in an interview process. I feel like in that all, I think it just creates a different environment in which you're trying to manage it.
Yeah. So I know that when I had my own company and I was hiring employees, we used to have a saying that, you know, hire slowly, fire quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've shared this with you. One of the reasons I sold my insurance agencies 10, 12 years ago is that I loved my employees. They were all very nice people, but it was like they were still children in many regards.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess I didn't have, I'm more of a lone wolf than a daddy, I guess, in this regard.
Well, I will say, particularly in hourly employees, there is an environment where it feels like there's babysitting mm-hmm. going on. You know, there's a compliance component to time and attendance and time tracking. And an employer sometimes feel like they're having to babysit mm-hmm. because they need to meet a mandate where they need to make sure there's a start time, make sure there's a clock stop time, that there's a break, meal break being taken. All those mm-hmm. things come into factor when an employer has to have a relationship with an employee.
Yeah, that's right. Another article that I found, and this is very interesting, and I've heard this news reports of this, that basically no, you know, employers are now not really requiring specific experience for specific jobs, that they're actually doing a lot of training on site, especially for younger folks. Are you seeing that happening as well?
On-job training. I think yes, there be again, due to the market, I think there are environments where skill becomes prioritized over a prerequisite like a four-year degree. Or, you know, they now have certification processes you can do online that are completely free through Google that you can do in 2 months. And so there is an environment now where, you know, skills and certifications happen more fluidly or quickly, or, you know, someone wants to upskill themselves or they want to change careers and they don't have the finances to go back into an educational system. They're going to look at these resources. And so more and more employers are looking at those skills and how they translate to someone completing and achieving their job. And jobs are becoming way more technical. I mean, your setup here is very technical. And, you know, the average workplace environment that isn't a labored intensive job, even those can be very technical. And so skills and forcibly having to do training when they get hired happens quite a bit.
In the last minute or two we have left, one of the things that fits that deals with a lot of what we're talking about is this whole, everybody was working remotely.
Yes.
And now, you know, they're finding that that wasn't necessary. Employers are finding that that wasn't necessarily what they want over the long haul. So how are you seeing this transition back into getting employees into the office?
Yeah. You know, I've heard hybrid. Mm-hmm. Hybrid it's been around a long time, because if you do have office workers and, you know, Fridays are days where, you know, no clients are coming in and they're working from home. So there are plenty of environments where hybrid environments have existed for a long time. I just think the expectation of the employee is that they have that option. Mm-hmm. They want the option to be able to do that. And, you know, we're living in a post-COVID environment. We have people that, even if they didn't want to go home, they went home to work. Mm-hmm. And then they stayed home and they're like, well, I don't have to do this. I don't have to get in my car. I don't have to drive here. So all those environments can have an impact in that decision making, and employees and employers are navigating that together.
Well, you know, considering the price of gas here in California, it looks like it just took another bump here in the last few days. I mean, I can understand people not wanting to burn gas all the time and to get to the office. But anyway, folks, we will be back with Jake, and we're going to talk about, the next topic is going to be the multi-generational workforce. And I think this is one of the most fascinating topics that's out there in human resources. So stand by. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Kevin Ureski. President Biden this afternoon signing an executive order limiting the number of migrants who can cross at the southern border. It shuts down asylum requests at 2,500 a day. Here's Republican Senator Tom Cotton on Fox's America Reports.
It's not even closing the barn door. Joe Biden is now saying to the cartels and to potential terrorists that as long as there's not more than 75,000 illegal aliens crossing our border a month, then you're still welcome to come.
It does not place a limit on children. Witness testimony has begun in the federal gun trial of first son Hunter Biden.
You've got the prosecution now presenting its case, and FBI Special Agent Erica Jensen is the first witness of the prosecution. They're playing an awful lot of excerpts from Hunter Biden's audiobook where he discusses his drug use.
Fox's Rich Edson, Biden pleaded not guilty to lying about drug use on a gun application. America is listening to Fox News.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location in Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Saturday and has a dump station for your RV. To learn more, call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online to deltaliquidenergy.com.
Happy birthday to Kokotai Restaurant. Thank you for 3 years at Kokotai, serving delicious Thai cuisine at the corner of Cabrillo and El Camino Real in Atascadero. Help us celebrate at Kokotai. Dine in or get Coco to go. 805-538-5057. 805-538-5057. Happy birthday to Kokotai Restaurant. By the way, I'm Coco.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jake Fredericks, HR and payroll consultant at Paychex. If you have any questions for him, call him at 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So let's talk about, Jake, next, the multi-generational workforce. And I think this is fascinating because, again, all of a sudden, for the first time in history, we have as many as five generations, I believe.
Yes.
In the workforce. Yeah. I mean, it's no secret. I've told the audience I'm 70. I'm still working full time. And I plan to continue to do so because I like what I do. And I've actually taken on a new project which is basically remote work, believe it or not. But I'm part of a new team out there with an insurance company to help people in the Midwest, financial advisors and their clients, on long-term care planning specifically. But I now get on these calls with people that are anywhere from in their 20s to my age now, and it's a lot of fun, actually. But I know there's some challenges, so let's unpack some of those challenges.
Yeah, what an amazing time, right? Five generations, and you're living that out right now. So millennials make up the largest of the workforce. They're 1/3. You know, you look at these different generations that are here, and they all have some type of different priority or where they're at. So for yourself, what would you say? It'd probably be, you know, prepared for retirement, you know, having a healthy, you know, 401k, or just having a healthy preparation for, you know, whatever it is. Each generation has their own things that they're tackling. But each generation also brings value to a company. And really that's seen and lived out through the culture. I think there's wellness programs that exist that could benefit any generation, promoting a work-life balance. Some of that could be remote. Some of that could be just, you know, here's our work schedule, being finite with the schedule, working with them, and then working with each other for PTO. I mean, it sounds simple, but just having the ability to have paid time off is something so simple, but really offers a benefit. Job descriptions. Just giving your employees job descriptions, reviewing them, and then giving them job descriptions again based on what they're capable of doing and their desire to grow within the company. And then finding ways to create good communication channels between those generations has a really big impact on that ability for them to work together.
Yeah. So according to this article from the Transamerica Institute, they came up with five or six different topics. I mean, we already talked about the flexible work arrangements, but one of the number one thing on the list was cultivate lifelong learning at the workplace.
Yeah.
And again, so how does a business do that? Let's get a little more specific. What kind of things can a business do to do that?
More simply put, it's training. Mm-hmm. From a business standpoint. So, you know, if you are in constant communication with your employees, you're talking to them about what they want to accomplish. Where do they want to go? What do they enjoy about their job? What do they not enjoy about their job? Surveys, simple survey of your staff and saying, what do you appreciate about your job? What would you do different? What do you want to be doing? And then providing those available resources and training to your employees is huge. Some of it is just, is around your culture. Like, are you bringing people together? Are you finding ways to bring people together and sharing common information? Like something as simple as, you know, work, sexual harassment. It sounds like a tough subject. It's a compliance subject, but just having open conversation about it and allowing people to talk about it opens an environment where generations can speak to each other. And then it's all digital now. But benefits to a company like ours and overall, a lot of this stuff is just stuff that you can assign to your employees, and you can do that progressively. And you can leverage tons of resources out there that provide free trainings on how to upskill to be a manager. Maybe, you know, an individual that's wants to be a manager, you could put them in a sequence of trainings that supports them on how to be an effective manager in their role.
So, I mean, I've read some articles where you've got old guys like me, you know, hard charging, you know, boomers who are still in the workforce, and that when I read the articles, and Gen Xers and older millennials really have a problem with guys like me sometimes in the workforce. So how are you seeing employees? I know you're laughing because you're a Gen Xer. So how's best way for a business to cope with that? Again, is it what you're talking about, or are there some special techniques?
No, there's some great resources. So one is understanding that your generation, since we're drawing a line here, that your generation knows a lot and is very capable of helping run a business or being valuable in a given role, and just understanding those responsibilities. And a company that values that would want to put you in a role, in a mentorship role for me. Mm-hmm. So it could be apprenticeship. It could be, you know, something very technical. It could be the overall industry. It could be how to treat a client. I mean, you just go down the list of how, you know, an average day for an employee, you know, that's working in the field or working with clients, you know, there's just nuances to those relationships. It could be introducing them to your existing book of business, you know, all about book of business and introducing someone in. It could be all those things realized and appreciated.
Yeah. Those are great ideas. Another area where I think this is really important, because, you know, I do a lot with long-term care planning and the long-term care insurance, is how can employers support a caregiving employee? I mean, we just had the Hidden Creek event. It benefited Alzheimer's Association and the Caps Low Adult Daycare Center here. Both of these organizations are constantly offering assistance to people who have spouses who are needing care,
sure,
but they're still in the workforce. What are you seeing else happening out there as far as respite care, those types of things? Are you seeing any HR services to help caregiving employees?
You know, most of those revolve around the businesses that service them. So, you know, you take, for example, a company that is a resource to those individuals in home, or however they're providing that service. There are ways in which you can assist that employee with, you know, organized paid time off. You can provide, you know, additional benefits. You could offer, you know, a stipend towards the cost of something. You could provide, you know, even remote work in an environment where remote work isn't conventional. You could create an environment where they're partially from home, where they could take on some of that role, you know, and the company could see the value in that, in maintaining that employee-employer relationship.
And one other item here that I think is really important to talk about is, and I, you know, this, I feel badly for the, you know, the millennials and the Gen Xers who are in the workforce, you know, because they're paying into the Social Security system to support old guys like me, right? These guys are never going to see a Social Security benefit program. And you know what, candidly, I think, I'm going to, in my lifetime, I'll see cutbacks to my Social Security benefits because the system is basically insolvent. So what are employers doing today to support that and younger employees who are concerned about it? I think that the Gen Xers in particular are focused on retirement.
Certainly.
So what kind of things you seeing being done out there?
Yeah. They realize that it's an insolvent organization and that there isn't a long road. Even if it was solvent, being it in that I'm in California, it wouldn't offset my cost of living anyway. So there also is talk about a retirement crisis, is that businesses aren't encouraging employees to save money. And so there have been incentive programs that have been created to encourage businesses, because they incur a cost to set up a 401k or a retirement program. And so, you know, the Fed is stepping in and offering in the Secure 2.0, which is the ability for a business to write off taxes towards the cost of setting these up. And it's also creating a simple process for an employee to enroll. Being on a paycheck side, within the 401k system, you could click a couple buttons and enroll in your 401k. It directly comes out of your existing ACH. And so that ability to quickly do it, and then for it to be offered by the employer, encouraging the employer to do a match, you know, based on 10-year or, you know, day one, depending upon the relationship. All those, I think, offset, you know, some of the expectation of this, you know, this money at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's going to be a, I think we need to move to a higher, a higher retirement age, you know, phased in higher retirement age, because longevity is getting longer. And again, I think if I'm still working, if we have a lot of boomers that are still working, you're going to have a lot of Gen Xers who are working into their 80s, just because of the demographics and the shortage of workers, generally speaking. So, I think this is a huge area that employers can be supportive of and help their employees. You know, creates a lot of goodwill between the employer and the employee. Yeah.
Even life insurance.
Yeah, we got payroll deduction, life insurance, and all that type of stuff. So, let's do a lightning round of topics now. We got about, I would say, this segment, we have about 8 or 9 minutes left. Employee handbooks. Are these still important for businesses of all sizes?
Most definitely. I call them the welcome mat for a new hire.
Okay.
It's an open door to understanding company mission and background. Creates an environment to showcase benefits and understanding the workplace better. Behavioral expectations, you know, and how to treat each other. And the biggest thing is that it's an ever-changing document. Why? Because it's tied directly into policies that are tied into state and federal requirements. So that is a fluid document that should be reviewed on a semi-annual basis to ensure that the information provided is compliant and to date, and that the information is accurate, so that they don't open themselves up to questions about them as an employer, or potentially, you know, confusion in employee relationship.
Are there penalties for not maintaining your employee handbook?
Well,
or is it just potential lawsuits down the line?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a compliance aspect, which is the most important. And those can definitely come down to breaking employee-employer relationships. You know, you're setting an expectation upon hire. The handbook is helping you do that. And if that environment is not sacred, like if you don't, I'll give them the opportunity to review it and have questions. It just sets the relationship off to a bad start.
Should you have your employees sign off on the fact that they've reviewed the handbook?
Always. And you should do it when you revise it.
Wow. Unbelievable. All right. You brought up a topic when we were talking pre-show, you know, topics last week, wage and hour compliance issues, PAGA lawsuits. So I don't want you to get too much into the weeds on this, but what the hell are wage and hour compliance issues?
Okay. So this pertains to an hourly employee, you know, where they are, you know, using a time clock where we're actually managing their time in and out and paying them on an hourly basis. So it's simple as, okay, I'm punching in, I work this amount of time, I punch out, I'm done with my day. There are mandates for rest periods. 15 paid within the first 4 to 5 hours, there has to be a 30-minute unpaid break. That has to be tracked.
Wow.
And if it's not tracked, the business opens the door to an employee litigating that loss.
Is this any size employee?
Yes.
Employer?
Yes.
Really? So if you have 5 guys working or gals working, 3 gals, people, whatever it is. If they're hourly, it's a problem. So again, this has, you know, obviously this impacts the restaurant business, the entertainment business. The tourist type hotels and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, hospitality, healthcare, you know, and then there's also overtime rules. And there's double overtime rules. And all those rules weigh in on how that wage and hour time should be paid. And then it has to be reflected on the pay stub. There was a settlement with Walmart. It was $102 million through this forum. And it was because overtime was not being properly reflected on pay stubs. So an employee went to an attorney and said, hey, I don't know that I'm actually getting paid my overtime. Oh, okay. So then that opens the door for the attorney to view all of the pay stubs for all employees. And so it forces this route for settlement, basically. And on top of that, the way those lawsuits shake out, the employees would only receive 25% of what the total.
So this is the attorneys make all the money.
Yes, the attorneys and
like the class action lawsuits.
Yes, so it's very similar to that, and it's a very much a nuisance to businesses. So usually when it happens, they immediately start entering into some type of settlement.
And of course, that just gets passed on to the consumer, ultimately.
Yeah,
it gets priced into the product
or into the insurance or however they're going to figure out how to manage it.
God almighty, that's really something else. Okay, artificial intelligence. What trends are you seeing here, and how are they impacting employers and employees?
Yeah, on the employee side, AI-assisted tools are huge. I work within a Microsoft environment. We have AI tools that are built in that give us some workflow simplifiers, some notifications, you know, stuff that just enables us to be a little more efficient. There's writing tools. You know, whenever you're producing, you know, documentation, there's good tools there on the employee side for that. On the employer side, you know, a lot of the big things are creating workflows that simplify, you know, business procedure. Integrations is a big word I hear pretty much every day of the week is, you know, we have this and this. We have these softwares. We got this. We got that. We're trying to bring this together into one solution. So that is probably the biggest thing that I hear. But in the hiring and in HR, there are a lot of now systems that can review applications and resumes, and it pours through and looks for keywords and it can extract those. All that stuff, I believe, from my point of view, is relatively new. You know, AI is a learning tool. It's a trained tool. So the more time it has to train, the more efficient it is. So I think as those things mature, I think they'll be used more, but it is the most hot topic in HR right now and in most businesses.
So, you know, this leads me to ask you a question about big data and you know, when employers are hiring people, to what, you know, I know in the insurance business, I mean, they can run a report and they know the prescriptions you're taking. You know, they know your medical claims. So if you didn't tell somebody on your application that you just had a quadruple bypass 6 months ago, it will show up on the medical claims, you know, database. So you can run, but you can't hide. Okay. But this has got to be the same in your industry as well, because, you know, you're looking for people, what they may have said on social media potentially.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing in that area?
As far as, you know, penetrating into the personal lives of employees, I'm not seeing a lot of tools that are, you know, trying to go past that initial wall.
Mm-hmm.
What I see the most is what you said earlier about skills versus prerequisites for the position, and this need to kind of look at data to determine what skills are best suited for somebody to do a job effectively. Okay. And that information is so valuable that a lot of what I'm seeing from the technology side is, you know, how can we leverage, you know, this success to, you know, future-proof positions that we hire by knowing what skills are best suited for that role. Personality tests. I mean, some of this stuff is relatively old, but, you know, they've simplified those because they have big data, you know, and there's a number of others that do that.
Last topic, which we may end up rolling into the last segment. Talk about PEOs, professional employer organizations, and they're growing now.
Yes.
Because of all this compliance stuff.
Certainly.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, compliance is probably the biggest piece to a PEO. When you have an employee that goes over to the PEO, the PEO, the professional employment organization, takes on the workers' comp policy. They take on all of the requirements to keep that employee safe. They pay them. They also can provide them with health benefits. And so the biggest draw to this is that a PEO can provide them with Cadillac benefits in a very small company.
Great. We may revisit this on the other side of the break because I think these are important. Folks, we'll be back in about 3 minutes, so please stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with stocks ending mixed following data that showed that job openings fell more than expected in April as labor market conditions ease, which could help the Fed's fight against inflation. Energy was among the worst performing sectors today, while tech and consumer staples rose. Oil and gas stocks fell as the price of crude dropped further. Shares of airlines, truckers, and cruise operators rose on hopes for lower fuel bills. And shares of Bath and Body Works tumbled over 12%, the worst performer in the S&P 500 today. The fragrance and home goods retailer delivered an earnings beat but is forecasting a disappointing second quarter. The Dow winners, McDonald's, Boeing, and Honeywell. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, Salesforce, and JP Morgan Chase. The Dow rising 140 points, the NASDAQ up 28, S&P 500 up 8. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Gold demand is hitting record highs, but supply may not keep up. I'm Dr. Ron Paul, and I believe physical gold is the only way to truly protect your retirement savings from a chaotic world. To learn how to diversify your IRA or 401k into physical precious metals, text the word SHELTER to 989898 for a free info kit on gold IRAs from Birch Gold Group. That's SHELTER to 989898.
Message and data rates may apply.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Hi, I'm glad you could make it.
Wow, your house looks amazing.
Thanks. We just had our whole house painted by Peak Painting. They even refinished all of our cabinets.
They did a beautiful job. I really like the colors.
They had their in-house designer help me with my color selection. The whole process was so easy. You should have them do a free estimate at your house. Just go to peakpainting.com to book an appointment. That's peakpainting.com.
I'm pulling it up on my phone right now.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peakpainting.com.
Painting services come with a 9-year labor and materials warranty. Some exclusions apply. Contact peakpainting.com for details. That's Peak Painting, peakpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jake Fredericks, Paychex HR Solutions. Next week's show will feature Shannon McQuatt, who is the Executive Director of Hospice Slo County. And this is something, boy, I think this is why I keep doing the show in a lot of regards, because I learned something new with every new guest. Hospice Slo County is a private hospice, and there's only 17 of them in the whole country. And they provide different kind of hospice services than a hospice that's provided by Medicare and Medicaid. So it's going to be an interesting segment. And then I talked to him this morning. Mike Brown of CoLab is going to be on the show next week, and he's going to do a deep dive into our new billion-dollar county budget. And it should be a great show next week. I always enjoy having Mike on. So, Jake, is there anything else about PEOs you wanted to share that we didn't touch on?
Yeah, basically, it's a tool for a business that is trying to offer more to their employees, more resources, better benefits, 401k, and want to do it within the confines of a compliant, safe environment. It's a wonderful product, and it's just grown so much over the last couple of years. And yeah.
Okay. And how many employees do you need to have to consider one of these?
There isn't a real cap on it. About 10 or more employees, and you're in that spot where you want to offer benefits, you want to have, health options, you want to access all these things.
Okay, let's keep on our lightning round here. Why don't you give us your top three strategies for creating a positive workforce and workplace environment?
The big one is doors always open, right? It sounds simple, but it's effective communication with your employees. So, you know, some of that is just, you know, you're personable and you want to talk to them and you know about their family. But also it could be, you know, you want to offer a performance review every 6 months. You want to have a dedicated touch point with your manager and your employee. You want to provide surveys to get feedback so you can kind of understand, you know, the day in the life. Those are simple ways that you can create effective communication, which takes that theme of my door's always open and brings it to light for the employee.
Managing your managers could be one of the most biggest challenges.
Certainly. And one of the benefits of this is that you're teaching your managers how to manage. If you show them how to do performance reviews, you show them how to do surveys, you give them the tools to be successful when they have to manage.
Okay. Anything else?
Recognition and rewards. So like find the good. You know, I constantly deal with employees that are, you know, in the weeds and they're trying to solve one problem. And, you know, morale and just formally recognizing your employees and finding ways to recognize what they're doing right goes a long way. And it doesn't have to be award ceremonies or, you know, big awards or giant bonuses. Sometimes it's very small stuff that lets an employee know that they feel recognized.
Okay, great.
And then the last would be professional development. Like, the question you can ask your employee is, do you see a future here? Do you see a future with our company? Well, what does that future look like? Tell me more about that and be curious about it. And then give them a path to professionally develop, whether that's outside of the company through a channel, or maybe you offer something internally that gives them those resources.
Those are great suggestions. So just to wrap this up, number one, I know you're going to be offering a complimentary HR consultation for any of our listeners. So I want you to make sure they have your contact information. And then speak to some services. I know Paychex probably got a whole raft of services that can help employers of all different sizes. So I'm going to give the rest of this time to you to talk about those things.
Thank you, Barry. So Paychex is focused on your people, your money, and your productivity. Those are the three areas that we tackle through technology, through managed service, and through a genuine direct contact that you can work with, either myself locally in our market here in the Central Coast, or with a direct contact that's going to support your needs as a business owner in those key areas. A free HR consultancy, you know, we're the largest HR consultancy in the U.S. We have over 600 HR consultants that work with us. And for free, when employers run into issues, we offer a one-hour session that's completely free because of Barry's show, where you can come and just ask any question you want, either about compliance or about, you know, questions in the market or trends. And our HR consultants work with thousands of businesses, particularly within the industry you're in, and can support you and those needs.
Great. And how can people get in touch with you?
So my email is jfrederick, FREDERICK, the number one, at Paychex. So that's PAYCHEX.com. And my number is area code 805-600-9075. Don't hesitate to reach out with anything that you can think of.
All right, Knight, we've got about another minute left. So is there anything else you'd like to touch on here? What's the hottest call you're getting? What seems to be the most pressing issue of the month, let's say?
Yeah, there are some mandates for training, violence prevention. There's a mandate that is upon us that's for violence prevention. It's a training that the state mandates that has to happen. And so most employers I'm talking to, I'm just asking them, you know, have you met this? Because this is at your back door and needs to be dealt with now. Paychex provides resources within our system that are free that allow them to offer that training and any other compliance or mandated training that they need to do.
So what is this for all size? Again, what size employer needs to do this?
Yeah, five or more employees. So the majority of the employers that I work with, they have those needs.
And what are they trying to, again, real quickly, I mean, what kind of violence are they talking about?
It's just a mandated program that talks about violence in the workplace.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Well, Jake, thanks for being on. This was a great show. We'll do it again.
Thank you, Barry.
This is a very fascinating topic. Folks, I'm looking forward to being back in the saddle here next week. And we got some great guests, and hopefully you will join us again. So have a great week, and I'll talk to you next week.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.